find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hey, this is Russ from the Canyon Manor. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. I didn't think we'd make it to Halloween this year. I thought we were certainly doomed. I didn't think we were going to get another holiday special ever recorded again. So it's good to be here, Mike. How are you?
Well, I mean, I'm still looking up at the sky for the asteroid to come, Scott. So fingers crossed, and your original thoughts may come true.
Well, you know, if there was an asteroid, immediately half of the U.S. population would be like... No, there ain't no way. I'm not getting out of the way. I'm not going anywhere. It's fake. It's fake. You know? So, maybe an asteroid is the solution. Maybe, like, it'll thin the herd enough to get rid of, like, the illogical people.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we can call up the Looney Tunes, ask if the Monstars can chuck a couple down at us, or Marvin the Martian, or one of them guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. It is our yearly Halloween episode. We've probably done like five or six of these. A couple years we had two. Some of our some of our past guests we've had on this were T-Dog from The Walking Dead. We had the Museum of Crime. We had Larry Zerner from Friday the 13th. We had Alex something or others.
Alex Vincent. Alex. From from Child's Play.
Alex Vincent. We had an exorcist on the show. So we've had a lot of cool Halloween guests. So we kind of look forward to this episode.
Father Sebastian.
Yeah. Vampire guy. So yeah, we've had, I don't know, six, seven Halloween guests on here. And today is no different. But Berlo, are you in the fall mood? I know you got your whole pumpkin thing going. Have you felt comfortable with fall yet?
I'm kind of in the 50-50 range. I mean, Georgia, I mean, we started getting them lower temperatures. I'm like, oh, my God, we might get, like, fall weather, and then it just creep back up to the 80s, so it kind of killed the vibe. I know tomorrow we're getting a little lower, but then it's going back up.
Do you miss that part of, like, the Northeast, like the seasons, like having kind of distinct seasons?
I mean, we do get colder weather. It's just, they kind of, it's like turns on the fly, if you will. It's like literally like winter, 2 weeks of spring, hot ass summer, couple weeks of winter, cold ass winter. So it just like literally turn, you got to make do with what you get down here, for lack of a better term.
Right.
But I tried to get in the mood. We drove an hour and a half to go to a corn maze just to find out that they don't advertise on their site that they close when it's bad weather. So
was it raining or something? Or
well, we had a hurricane / tornado watch the day before, but this is, like I said, we went up there on the Sunday figuring, okay, you know, maybe it's a little muddy, but I mean, Jersey, that's what it is. It's like, all right, you're more than welcome to come. You might need a new pair of sneakers, but so be it. But
it'd be funny if you went during the hurricane and were still pissed off it was closed. Like, what the hell, man? The corn is just slapping you in the face as you go through.
Scott, that's the best time. The corn is tilted so you can get out of the maze quicker.
You should have just...
I break so many records when I go during the tornadoes.
There's probably enough corn growing out there where you could just like hop into someone else's cornfield and say it was the maze and get the same feeling.
I ever tell you my dad almost, I think it was a corn, not in a corn maze, but he almost died in a corn field, actually.
Okay. No, I don't think so. And if you didn't, it's been a while.
Yeah, so basically, as I've referenced my dad's stories, my dad, him and his buddies and all, they were always getting into trouble and stuff like that. So from what I understood from my dad's story is they were in like a cornfield and like kind of late fall, early winter when it's like the crops are nothing. They're just like brittle and everything like that. And apparently one of the guys saw it'd be cool if they started a fire there. Not realizing.
I see where this is going.
Yeah. When you're in the middle of a cornfield, that thing kind of spreads fast. So from what I ascertained, the guy did it and it was just like sprinting for like 10 minutes to save their lives.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. A fire in the middle of a cornfield like has to be somewhat obvious to 98% of people what the outcome of that could be.
Well, I mean, it was the 50s. They didn't have the internet back then. So, I mean, who knew dry corn was very flammable?
So you think people only figured out that dry things were flammable once the internet came around?
Well, no. I mean, they had encyclopedias. My dad was poor, so he didn't own, like, a whole set of encyclopedias. But I'm sure
he owned, like, the Q and the X.
Damn it. Why?
Yeah, so sorry, we lost Mike to his mix master Mike days over there. But yeah, we're just talking about how your dad with his he only had a couple of the B squad encyclopedias.
Yeah, he was just like running out of the field. Like, what do you mean we don't have C or F or corn and fire?
I remember back in the day. Like, I don't know if it was from the food store or there was like an encyclopedia, like almost for kids. I think it was Encyclopedia Britannica for kids. And like my grandma would buy like one every month or every couple of weeks. And like, I guess through the whole year, you get the whole set. And I remember like that being really excited about getting the full encyclopedia set.
Yeah. And then like teachers had to like forgive students that gave wrong answers when they recite an encyclopedia that's like 6 years old. It's like one of those, well, what can we do? This is all we got.
So, yeah. Did you try, like, after you went to the non-existent corn maze of that day, did you try to like do something to conjure up the fall spirit still? Or were you like, all right, let's go home?
We went to a local brewery there It was all right, but it was rain was decent that day, and that place was crowded, and this was a crowd that was not thinking of COVID's a thing.
Right.
I mean, it was literally like shoulder to shoulder everywhere. Like, so we just pretty much, I had my flight, we grabbed a bite, and then we took the hour and a half drive back home.
Nice. I tried getting in the fall spirit. We had our second annual pumpkin carving. We had a couple friends over and we carve a pumpkin and try to top each other. I went really hard. I went to try to do the Death Star. I think you saw my picture and it came out pretty well, but it was like, I could have when I stopped, I probably could have put another 2.5 hours in just like carving little windows and little holes and dude, next year I'm going something way more basic because last year I did like a moose scenery thing. This year I did the Death Star, and like everyone's done. Like, and we want to light them all, so there's like 8 of us, and I'm still like hacking away, and it's getting dark outside, and it's just Death Star is not a one day pumpkin carve. That's for sure.
Yeah, if I got impatient, I would just be like, down the shaft and just crush your pumpkin.
Yeah.
Call me Luke Skywalker, bam.
Yeah, those, that's another guy. We had the professional pumpkin carver on for Halloween episode once too.
Oh yeah, and the pumpkin chunkers.
Pumpkin chunkers. Yeah. So we've been at this for a while, man.
Yeah.
So I guess, Mike, we could start with a traditional-ish Halloween thing. Mike, you want to guess at some of the top costumes for this year, for 2020? What are some of the most popular adult costumes?
For this year,
going into 2020, what do you think are some of the most popular costumes?
I'm sure somebody's going around as the COVID circle, but I'm not sure that made the list.
Well, you're in the right church, wrong pew, but, you have a lot of people think about COVID and some figureheads from the COVID, experience here.
Fauci
clocking in at number one, Dr. Fauci, actually number two on this list, but I think
every 50 or 60 year old male is just like, yes, I'm going to be the cool one this year.
And girls are going to be doing sexy Dr. Fauci. There'll be zombie Dr. Fauci's. There'll be groups of just Fauci's. Maybe everyone's a Fauci, in a different way.
Maybe you can make a quartet and call them the Fauci.
Oh, the four Fauci's.
So
Fauci on this list, number two, but I looked at a couple and he's right up there. Berlo, care to take another guess at top costumes this year?
The Donald.
He's not on this particular list, but I mean, I feel like he's going to be on everyone's list for years to come. So, guess is good. The guess is good.
Let's see who's in the news lately.
Think beginning of the pandemic, if you will. The beginning. Yeah. Huge, you couldn't go online without seeing posts about this. I'll give you a hint. It involves animals.
Oh, a bat.
What'd you say, a bat?
A bat?
No.
You said it involves animals. That was my first thought.
I'm not going
that's
like...
where we all...
I'm not going traditional. We're not going pumpkin, ghost, or bat.
Well, I'm saying the bat was where it quote unquote started from. That's why
I see what you mean.
Guessed it.
Oh, COVID bat, maybe?
Yeah. That's why when you said animals, that's my first thought.
Like a Wuhan bat?
Yeah.
All right. It involves exotic animals.
Oh, the Tiger King.
Yes.
Good old Joe Exotic.
Yes, Joe Exotic going to be a big one, along with his counterpart, Carol Baskin. Huge. I bet you'll get a Joe Exotic and his two husbands. I bet you'll get some guys doing that. I bet you get Carol Baskin and her weird husband. I bet you get a bunch of that going on. Dude, doesn't that seem 100 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's so odd, the third guy we totally forgot about. The one that, had the harem.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, a comic we both know a couple years prior to that coming out went to his place. I forget his name. The one that he looks like he looks like another comic we know. He looks like Johnny Hollywood. But
okay.
But she went to that place, and she said she remembers it being, a little strange with all these women hanging around, and it did feel a little culty, but they said the experience was amazing.
Yeah, I wonder if he's sitting back yo, why nobody talking to me anymore? Just
yeah.
Seriously, do I need a sequel for all of you to be questioning my harem?
I don't know how well on the up and up that guy was either, though. It didn't seem like anyone
any of them were on the up and up, to be brutally honest. Mm-mm. I mean, Lord, I saw Carol Baskin on Dancing with the Stars, and she is literally just showing up for the fans to vote her continuously on.
I heard that the first night of Dancing with the Stars, the family of Carol Baskin. The family of Carol Baskin's disappeared husband that, you know, no one knows where he is.
Sardine oil boy, gotcha.
Yeah. They paid for ads running about his mysterious death, and that if you have any information on Carol Baskin, please call this number. It was like a lawyer thing. So they paid like tons of money. It kind of reminds me of the Goldmans in the OJ case. Like they can't, they're still fighting for his, for justice.
See,
for him.
If Carol is really smart, she would make like a fake one. It says exactly like that, but it's a toll free line to vote her into the next round of Dancing with the Stars. They're like, she's a murderer. I know. Do, 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 do. You voted in Carol Baskin. Damn it.
Yeah. Like, there's no way she can actually be good at dancing, right?
Oh, no. She very slow motion. You could tell it's one of those. It's like she went through like three lessons. She's like, I kind of know what to do. And the dance partner's mostly like, listen, all right, I'm going to carry this boat. Just don't trip over yourself kind of deals.
Well, sticking in the same line of Dancing with the Stars, and other popular costumes are coming from a show that's kind of similar in
vein. Masked Singer?
Yeah, correct. A lot of Masked Singer, apparently, people trying to do that kind of vibe. Another one, Mr. Rogers popped up, I guess maybe because the movie came out. I don't know how big of a
thing. Oh, yeah, that was this year. God dang, this year. Seems like it's been a century.
Yeah.
I saw that in the theater. Remember those?
Yeah, right. Was that movie any good?
It was pretty damn good. Yeah. It was Tom Hanks that played him, and he did a really good job just keeping with, the monotone. It wasn't 100% on Mr. Rogers. It's more the story of the guy who did the article for Mr. Rogers. It was a fascinating story, but it's a solid watch.
Yeah,
I would totally recommend.
Because that documentary on Mr. Rogers came out at the same time, and I saw the documentary, but I never saw the movie. Ranking high up there in a couple lists was Alexander Hamilton from the play Hamilton, which is a big one right now. One that I wasn't really too up on. I guess I'm out of the loop. Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly. Is they're an item, I guess. So I guess a lot of fake tattoos and stuff like that.
All right.
A lot of quarantine ones, like a quarantine couch potato, a quarantine this, that, blah, 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 blah. Have you ever heard of Mia from Little Fires Everywhere? I don't even know what that is.
I'm going to Google that stuff up now.
Okay. Snapchat filters, that was I saw a lot of that last year too. People like being life like Snapchat filters. And one that popped up, which I think would be kind of a cool one, was Little Nas X. You could like wear the pink cowboy outfit and yeah. So those are some of the trending Halloween costumes, Mike, if you're interested in dressing up this year.
I'm good.
Yeah,
I went through the list and I said denied.
Yeah, last year was probably the most I did for Halloween in decades. I had two costumes, I had two parties in one day to go to, and I went through two. I was the guy from Up. No, I was the Boy Scout from Up, and then I had to immediately come home, and I got into full Conor McGregor garb, and that involved shaving my entire body, not my body, my whole chest and belly. It was weird, man. But the costume came out great. That was probably one of the best costumes I ever had put together. But I had fake tattoo gunk in my belly button, and it was for days later. But
how many razor bumps did you have after that costume? Out of curiosity,
it wasn't pretty. It wasn't great. It was a little it was a little rough around the edge. But it didn't grow back quick. I felt like one of those dogs without fur. One of those weird
hairless dog. I mean, I don't think there's an official breed name. I think it's literally hairless dog.
Well, yeah, I felt like a hairless dog, if you will, a mole rat, a naked mole rat. I didn't feel right. I'm not a guy who can have no hair. It's not a good look for me.
Did you do the shaving solo? Did you have to call the wifey in?
No, I did. I did the shavings solo, and she helped put on the Connor tattoos. Like, gotcha. She helped. They like you really had to. They were like $20 a piece to tattoo. Like they like you know.
Wow.
Yeah. But I won the costume contest, so worth it.
prize was $5, so worth it.
I think the prize was like some candy and like little airplane bottles, like a Jack Daniels and a Jameson or something like that. So, you know, not bad. It's more about the win. It's the win. You know, I don't care what it is. It's the win.
You're going to be telling your grandfather, tell us the story again. It was 2019. Yeah. I was determined to win that contest. Your great grandmother shaved my chest like no other woman ever did.
Well, you know, I won two masquerades in high school, so I got really? Three wins under my belt.
But there's 4 years of high school. So what year did you get smacked?
I only went to two. I did two partners costumes. We did, which is still a good costume today. We did 70s basketball players, and I had like the shorts up to my like you know my crotch. I had like a New Jersey Nets like ABA looking uniform, the high socks, the Converse, big black mustache, afro with the headband on the afro. That was a good one. And then I think the next year we did like 80s rappers with like we had big giant boom boxes and like gold. And I had a car stereo hanging from my neck. It was it was pretty good. I thought I peaked, but last year I guess I brought it back, you know.
So why'd you not go like the third year?
Because I went junior and senior year, so I wasn't in high school anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't
be
like
great if you're like, no, I'm defending my title. Mr. Brennan, you've been out of school for 6 years now. Check out these threads.
I'm
Conor McGregor.
I still remember first and second grade, I won back-to-back spelling bees. They had a big spelling bee each year. And the third year, it only went to third grade, and I remember losing on the word taught.
Taught?
Taught. Like you, I taught you to do something.
Okay.
I spelled it. T-O-U-G-H-T.
Oh, man. Rookie mistake. Still, rookie mistake.
But maybe somewhere in my mom's house, there's two spelling bee trophies somewhere. So, you know.
Clearly, your teacher didn't taught you properly.
No, I was not. I was not taught-ed correctly. Let's shift gears before we get to our guest, Berlu. You ever think about what it'd be like to... You know, it is Halloween, so we get a little gory here. Is there a part of the body you're not happy with? Like, you could live without?
What do you mean, live without? Like, chop off?
Yes,
or...
yes. Like if I was like, okay, bro, you got to get rid of one part of your body going forward, what would you choose?
I guess a pinky toe?
Yeah.
Seems like the logical one.
Right. Well,
yeah, I don't know, maybe an earlobe if that counts.
So you're saying you like your body, like you like having all your parts.
Like connected, yeah. If you're talking about like lose weight, I can work on the gut, but I'm not going to let a guy come over with a butcher knife and tear at it.
So you're perfectly happy having all the parts that you were born with is what I'm saying.
God gave it to me. I might as well keep it on me.
All right. Well, that would be a normal response, right? But some people, this is not the case, Mike. This is not the case. Some people don't feel comfortable with certain parts of their body. And I want to dive into three news stories here. And I want you to tell me which one you think is the craziest. Okay?
Okay.
These are all three people that, let's say, voluntarily... got rid of something they were born with. Okay.
I've heard about some of these stories. But,
oh, yeah.
I'm interested in hearing your three.
Well, these were three that I found that weren't like, yeah, I've seen some of the like episodes. Remember that show, like Taboo? I think they did one where people try to, they have like a body dysmorphia kind of thing where they want their arm chopped off or something like that. I tried to go a little outside of that. Okay, so let's just get to it. All right, Berlo. We'll start with one that was very not beautician. What's the word I'm looking for? Aesthetic. It was for an aesthetic they were going for, not because of like a pain or an adversity. This guy was going for a certain look. All right.
Okay.
Mans pays £6,000, so I guess that's probably around 10, 11 grand, to have his ears removed so his head would look like a skull. And he keeps his earlobes in a jar. Okay? An extreme tattoo that was over £6,000 to have his ears removed so that his head looked like a skull. Sandro, who is known as Mr. Skullface on social media, insists...
All right. Hold on. Before you continue... If you're putting down £6,000 or $10,000 US,
right,
you gotta have a sweeter nickname than freaking Mr. Skullface.
I thought that
is like the first one that's thrown out by like an 8-year-old. You do not accept that.
I thought you were gonna say, hold on, so you can try to contact Mr. Skullface.
You talk about Pete? Hold up, let me get him on Zoom.
No, I mean, that would be a great guess. We could pull him right on here. Sandro, known as Mr. Skullface on social media, insisted his transformed appearance made him feel more confident, even though others called him disturbed and sick, Berlo. The 39-year-old from Fisterwald, Germany, now keeps the pair of lobes in a jar and is planning to have his eyeballs tattooed and the tip of his nose removed. Sandra said he first became interested in the world of body modification in 2007 when he saw somebody on TV with spikes in their head. Over the past 13 years, Sandro has had 17 body modifications, including tongue-splitting surgery and contactless payment chip embedded in his wrist. So I guess he's paying. Zoltan Istvan might like this guy. He's paying for things with his wrist. He also underwent operations to insert implants in his forehead, forearm, and hand. Sandro believes that his appearance has made it difficult for him to find a job or a relationship, but it has boosted his confidence.
You can't get a job or a girl, but your confidence is boosted. Okay. I mean, each their own. I mean, it'd be kind of weird to head into your local Walmart to bump into that. But let's see here. The previous page is sending you to.
Now, okay. Friends have talked to me out of modification, especially when it came to cutting off my ears. But I'm just a person who likes to go his own way. If people stare, I don't really care. If someone says something like, "You're a sick old man," then I will answer with "Thank you for the compliment." He claims that negative comments go in one side and out the other. Well, that's probably because he has no ears to block those comments. But it has strengthened my self-confidence. But he warns those who are interested in body modification to make careful decisions. If you're a beginner, Berlo, do a long, thorough research. Think carefully about everything and take your time.
All right, so you sent me over the article. First thing that pops in my mind, he looks more like a fish man than a skull.
I was thinking the same thing, or reptilian almost.
Yeah, like reptile from Mortal Kombat. It is not skull-like. Second of all, I'm kind of curious why he kept on with glasses after he removes his ears.
Right.
You figured that'd be the natural, hey, let's go to contacts now.
You know, if you really want to be a skull, maybe he's got to get his eyes completely blackened so they look hollow, you know. But he's also got tattoos all over his face, so I don't really get the skull vibe. And he's got some, like, spiky-ish hair, so that's not really skullish either. How are you going to have hair?
I don't know. And then, like, the chip he's got in his arm, it's like a starfish or something like that. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm all for if you want to do it, God bless you, go out and do it. But this one's a little hard to wrap around my head, but God bless the kid.
Berlo, if you had to modify any part of your body, what would you do?
Modify part of my body. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tough sell. Yeah, I might have to come back to that one, to be brutally honest. I got to, like, think of options.
Right, you don't want to, like, I don't know, lengthen a finger or shorten a toe or something like that, you know?
I mean, I guess I would get this finger fixed, the one I got broken, but that's not really a modification.
What if you got, like, if you made it, like, a robotic, like, got rid of that old crappy finger of yours and... You know, updated
like,
it to something.
Make it like a laser finger or something like
laser,
that?
Laser, fire, maybe Wi-Fi connection in there, something like that.
Maybe if I was single and some girl was lighting up a cigarette, I'd be like, wait a sec, and just put up my finger.
Exactly. Now you're thinking. Now
you're... All right, now I'm getting sold on this stuff. Now, now we're cooking with gas.
All right. Second story here. This one's pretty brutal, man. I mean, because I watched an interview with this guy. But, man hacks off his hand using a DIY guillotine. Desperate Mark Goddard hacked off his hand to end years of pain after doctors refused to amputate. The married dad of one, 44, attempted the gruesome DIY operation using a homemade guillotine, which failed to sever the limb at his wrist, so he had to finish the job with a knife. He then threw his severed hand on a fire to make sure it could not be sewn back on. Horrified wife Samantha came home 10 minutes later and dialed, I guess 999 over there is 911. But by the time paramedics and officers arrived, his hand had been burned too badly to be saved. The married dad of one knocked up his spring-loaded contraption using two planks of wood, elastic cords, and an axe. He spent 2 weeks assembling and testing it out in his back garden. Goddard said he suffers from pain, which stems from a motorcycle accident 16 years ago, and was now threatening to cut off his arm unless doctors removed it surgically. He said the medics refused to amputate his arm because his hand and wrist were healthy, so they had no excuse to operate. He said, I should not have to go on such extremes to get my pain stopped. There was no alternative, and that was having it done properly in the hospital. No one could do anything to help me, so I did it myself. I got rid of it because they told me they had problems amputating my arm with a good hand on it. So I took it upon myself, and now there's no reason why they can't operate. Goddard previously tried to use a knife to remove his hand, but only managed to sever three tendons and a nerve. He insists he has undergone three psychiatric evaluations and has passed all three.
I mean, off the bat, 2 weeks seems like a long time to figure out how to cut off your hand.
Yeah. So I sent you the link. Look at the machine he made, man. It's so like, just, I don't know, like DIY axe. Like, it looks like you would make it to like chop fruit or something like that.
Yeah. It's like one of those when the coyote bought something from Acme.
Yeah.
Kind of deals. Looking at it, like, literally, I could see him buying that to kill the Roadrunner.
Yes. So, I mean, just the planning ahead of time is what's frightening about the story. Like, this guy was thinking about it for weeks and weeks and weeks and building a machine to get it done. I wonder when, like, what made him decide on the day. Like, oh, today's, like, oh, my wife's going to be out of the house for a little bit. Let's get this done.
Yeah, you think he slipped the wife a credit card? It's like, why don't you go out and buy something special? You know, go yep. out and buy something nice and all. Oh, okay, you want to come? No. you go out on your own. Call up some friends, have some brunch. You know, I'll be laying around the house, maybe build a fire, do some work in the shed. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty brutal. I listened to the interview, and he just is straightforward. And he basically is like threatening, like, if they don't remove more parts, he's going to keep doing it himself.
I mean, it's hard to say about that. I mean, that's the one-handed Seahawks player kind of the same thing. That's why they amputated his hand and all. When it, I think it was something like the umbilical cord was strapped around his arm and there was no blood flow.
Do you think Mark let him borrow his machine?
No, I don't think he had a machine. But that guy, his parents finally listened to him because they said, like, the kid had so much pain when he was 6 years old, like grabbed a big knife and was ready to chop off his hand.
Yeah.
It's a hard sell because on one side you can say I'm going through pain and you can understand the excruciating pain. But at the same time, I mean, they're going through and they're saying we don't see anything wrong. And the fact that he's threatening not to stop and keep going, that's when I start questioning if it is mental.
Yeah, yeah. That's a brutal one. I don't know. It's hard to say, you have to get your arm, you can't get your arm amputated. But I also understand the doctors, they're not going to do it like it's almost like an optional surgery at that point. So,
Do you think he used to test the machine out of curiosity? Was it like fruit? Was it like T-bone steaks?
Yeah, see, I would go with something like, I know Mythbusters always used like pigs for like the simulation of like human skin. So maybe I would go with like a rack of ribs or something like that.
Boy, David's really into barbecue, man. He bought like 10 whole hogs, man. He's in there every day chopping them up.
It's kind of weird, though. We never get any of his food. He never offers
it. Every time he's like, damn it, and he throws them out. I don't understand.
All right, one more, Mike, and this one is, I think, the craziest one, okay? And then we'll get to our guest here. So a woman, 21, who gouged out her own eyes while on drugs, speaks out nearly a year later, I can't give up. Okay? Nearly a year ago, Kaylee Muthart horrified the world when she gouged out her own eyes during a meth-induced psychotic episode. Hallucinating wildly during the February 6th incident, the 21-year-old from Anderson, South Carolina, ripped out her own eyeballs, squishing them in her hands while a shocked onlooker struggled to restrain her. Muthart had been awake for almost 48 hours, snorting and injecting a concoction of tainted methamphetamine. The drugs take your fears and beliefs and amplify them. I thought I had to take my eyes out to survive and save the world. And survive she has, but her journey has been arduous. It has been a year tuning out the haters and taming the self-reclamation, learning to maneuver the world of darkness and rerouting her goals. She's been giving a second chance, her mother says. Mentally and physically, Kaylee has come so far. We take it one day at a time. We hope she gets better. Recently, she was just given prosthetics, eyeballs, okay? But essentially, you got this, like, pretty, 18, 19-year-old girl, their life ahead of her, does some drugs, and rips her own eyeballs out, Mike.
It's always fascinating the human mind because, I mean, how we're wired. I can't fathom a scenario. What can go into your brain where it's like, all right, reroute. Okay, tearing out my eyeballs is the best option right now.
And the sheer, pain and what drugs are able to suppress, to get one eyeball out and do that and squish. Apparently they were still attached while she was squishing them. And then to do the second one, just to have the, maybe a mess up and get rid of one, but you're doing both at the same time. It's brutal, man.
Yeah. I could have sworn there was a Mythbusters where they tested it. The Kill Bill scenario where they said it was impossible, but I guess technically you could just keep on shoving your finger up and eventually you'll get to the other side to pull it out.
Try it now for the Halloween episode. Go.
All right. Let's see. I'm about quarter in. I can see the ceiling and you, Scott. This is interesting.
Yeah. Well, apparently it is possible because they showed this girl and she definitely did not have eyeballs. And now she has prosthetic ones that certainly don't look exactly like eyeballs, but
I'm also curious how long was she on drugs? Like, was this like one of her first times where it's like, oh my God, this is what drugs do to you?
Apparently, I kind of read a second article on it. Apparently she was like on a binge for like 2 days and also wasn't like a, she says she wasn't like a frequent user and it was like tainted with something that made her go nuts. I mean, we have seen people eat each other on bath salts and whatnot. So I don't know, man. So, I don't know, which one you think is the worst? The guy removing his own earlobes, making him Mr. Skullface, the man hacking himself, his arm off with a machine, or do you Are you going eye gouger?
And what am I? What is the scale, if you will, I'm looking at here? What's most horrifying? Which is the last I would want?
Yeah, I guess just which story is like the most is just, I don't know, the most shocking, I guess.
I guess I got to go with number three. Eyes is a thing. It's like there's a horror movie. It's called Zombie, Zombi. I believe it was a French film. And there's a scene where the zombie grabs a girl's head and it's trying to pull her out to eat her.
Right.
And the scene is basically she's behind a wood wall. And there's a piece of wood splintered, and it's slowly pulling her in as it's shoving the piece of wood into her eye, which is
nice.
It's like, even knowing the scene, I can't watch the scene. So just the fact that somehow in her brain convinces her, rip your eyes out, and even when you're not got the full job done, like squishing them, and then go, all right, halfway done.
I know. The eyeball one to me is the most horrifying also.
Yeah. I mean, the second story, I feel bad for the guy, whether it's physical pain or mental pain. The first one, the guy's just wanted to do it and he went through a surgeon. So I can't really say that's ultra horrifying to be knocked out as they cut it off and whatever. So it's got to be three.
Yeah, I agree with three. Especially like, I don't know. You picture like a young person, like a young girl like that doing that. It's just like, man, you have your whole life ahead of you. Now you're blind, you know, like, oof, brutal. And like, you're going to be answering that the rest of your life. Like, oh, how'd that happen? Well, you see, I ripped my own eyeballs out and it turned out it was a bad decision. It just wasn't, I wouldn't recommend it, you know, but
So ripping your eyes out, not a good Yelp review.
No.
That's what you're telling. One star.
I said that about Suicide Squad. That was actually my review. I wanted to rip my eyeball out.
Scott, you got to be stuck in the theater watching Suicide Squad and its upcoming sequel or rip your eyeballs out.
Tempting. But so our guest today, he knows all about gory stuff and scary stuff and scaring the hell out of people, freaking them out, and I guess getting to their darkest places you could take people.
Oh, it's me?
Yeah. It's Mike, everybody!
Hey! Nice light conversation tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
So if you go into like a Google search and look up scariest haunted houses in the United States and whatnot, you get different lists, but one name that always comes up is the McCamey Manor. And this is, we have Russ McCamey coming on, who is the owner, the creator, one of the actors, the guy basically in charge of this McCamey Manor that he runs out of his own house. And you're talking like day long events with everything from torture to seclusion to bugs to whatever else. And he comes with all sorts of controversy. His name's all over the place, and people are dying, no pun intended, to try to get into trying to do his experience. And we got to learn all about it, and it's pretty fascinating, and it's a perfect timing for our Halloween episode. So without further ado, enjoy the interview with Russ McCamey. So how are you, Russ?
It was hidden. I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Doing
that's
great.
That's Mike. I'm Scott. Thanks for giving us a few minutes on the show here. We appreciate the time. I guess I would assume this time of year you get a lot of requests and people trying to reach out to talk to you. Is this always like the biggest part of your year as far as interacting with the other fans or people trying to get information from you?
Well, it's kind of year round. So, you know, the requests come through all the time, regardless what month it is. October is a little busier, you know, people hear about it and they want to go ahead and take the tour or what have you. And they find out all the requirements and it's not just as simple as just jumping into it. But, So it's a little busier, but it stays pretty constant year round, actually.
Interesting.
Okay. Now, I got to ask, I mean, it's usually two types of people that get into like horror movies or haunted houses. It's either when you were a child, you literally cried and crap your pants for like 6 years, kept the nightlight on, or literally like you're like 5 years old cheering for Leatherface. Which one were you?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because when I first saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I was like a junior in high school or a sophomore or something like that. And I never saw a film like that before. You know, it looked like a documentary. It looked real to me. And I remember my mother was actually in the audience, and I remember her coming down to me, you know, tapped me on the shoulder and saying, "Are you okay? Do you want to leave?"
Yeah.
I'm all right. But that movie scared me because it seemed so real to me. It was so raw. So I guess I was the one where it scared me.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep. So how many, when did the idea of starting your own version of whatever you want to call haunted house, scare experience, like,
right,
when did that start for you, and when did that seed plant itself in your head? Like, I want to do my own thing.
When I was a little kid, when my dad used to take me around trick-or-treating, and then we would go to these houses that people would do something special and different in their front yard or on the porch or something, you know, or I remember specifically about one house. It just had a simple cardboard box maze that you had to crawl through. But I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And that really stuck with me. And so growing up, it's like, yeah, you know, I want to do this. I want to go ahead and create something that's different and unusual. And so it kind of started right there, just trick-or-treating with my dad.
Huh. So what year was the first one that you, I mean, I don't, did you have other names for it until you really started kicking off, or did you, what was the first year that this really all started for you?
I'd say about 1995.
Okay.
is when things got serious, and that's when the first McCamey Manor was produced. Of course, it was different back then. You know, I started out at like a boo haunt, and then it just kind of progressed to something else naturally, because I always kind of did things outside the box, and I liked doing things that were cinematic, for example, and it was just kind of fun for me to kind of make things different, and the audience really enjoyed it, so kind of just, you know, kind of progressed to what it is now.
Yeah.
And,
well, it certainly progressed.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind, and we're obviously going to go into how intense your place is versus regular haunted houses. I'm fairly curious about the process of coming up with the waiver, because to me, it seems like that had to been like the longest kind of stretch of things where you were chatting with somebody. Can I do this? Can I do that? What? How can I word it just to make sure you're all safe?
Right. The waiver is very fluid. It changes all the time. You know, when new stunts get added, when new things, you know, that are happening here at the Manor take place, we have to incorporate that as well. And a lot of lawyers looked at it. A lot of lawyers, you know, six or seven different lawyers looked at it and kind of added their 2 cents into it. And so it was just a thing. It just took some time to finally kind of get it nailed down, and it's still not perfect, but at least it kind of it gives the audience, you know, a pretty good idea of what's going to happen. In fact, it tells them exactly what's going to happen. That's the whole idea behind the waiver, is that it explains to you in gruesome detail exactly what will take place, and I even tell you how to do every single thing that's on the waiver. Because what I don't want is someone to come back at me and say, "Oh, I didn't know you were going to pull my teeth. I didn't know you were going to pull my nails." Yeah, you did. Number 39 right here says we're going to pull teeth, you know? So, so everything is on there. They can't come back and say they didn't know about a certain situation. So it covers me, covers them. It gives them a chance to ask all the questions they want, you know, because the more informed they are going in, the better they'll do at the show, which means that, you know, the more fun they're going to have and the more fun I'm going to have. So, you know, I want them to be as informed as possible.
So when it went from like your beginnings in 95, when did it start to get to the point where you were getting recognition as being, you know, I did like Google a bunch of things, look at videos from 2010 and
right.
Tour. When did it get to the point where you're like, I got to top this and make this, you know, some people call it the scariest experience in the country. Like, how did you get from I'm interested in haunted houses and horror movies to the guy in the country who has the scariest thing going or the most intense experience?
Right. Well, again, it started about 95, and then it was just kind of a backyard garage haunt, you know, then it moved to around the house, and it moved to take over the entire house basically. And then it moved on to something else and this and that and whatever. But I'd say probably about 2009, 2008, people started taking notice of it, started getting a lot of news. And, you know, so about 2007, 8, 9, thereabouts is when things started taking off for me.
And where were you getting the ideas? Just from your imagination or collaboration? Yeah. or just like every year I got to make it better, 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 better?
Exactly. Every year we have to make it better and better and better. And it all comes from my little noodle, my little noggin up here. And it all happens like either when I'm sleeping or it happens.
I like that's how you can rest.
Yeah, exactly. But that's when I rehearse everything. I rehearse it all when I'm just laying in bed, just thinking of it. I can get real detailed in my brain and get very specific about how things are going to happen. And so I don't need to rehearse. I do that already 1,000 times prior to, and it always turns out just like I assumed it would. It's pretty bizarre how it works, but all the rehearsal, all that prior to stuff, is all just up in the noodle and go from there.
Now tell us about the actors that help you in this process. Like, how much of it do you have to go into them saying you have to prepare for this or that, or are you more like kind of like a strict kind of director? It's like, I want you to be intense in this way and that way and be scary in that way, don't ad lib.
Right. So the haunt has changed throughout the years. Every year or even twice a year I reinvent it. So when I moved out here to Tennessee, I made it to where there's no actors. And so there are no actors. It's only me. It's just the contestant mentally against me mentally.
Really?
And wow. So, and it's tougher. And it's so tough that this is where I offered $20,000 if you can get through it. So I don't need big rough and tumble guys to be shaking somebody around and yelling and screaming at you and pushing you around. And that's not needed because I've done that, been there, and that was fine. That was one style of the haunt, but it's scarier when it's a mental haunt and when it's, you know, all about one-on-one, you against me. And it sounds easy, but clearly it's not. It's much more difficult, and that's why I felt comfortable offering $20,000 to anyone who could get through it, and nobody ever got through it. Now, they got through the other haunt. They got through the haunt with the actors easily. That wasn't a big deal because you only can get yelled and screamed at so many times. It's like, okay, good, you're yelling at me, you're pushing me around, I get it, okay, scary, all right. But when you're inside their head and when you're using hypnosis and other mind control techniques, it's really scary because I can make people believe whatever I want them to believe. And if you can do that, that's a lot of control on people. And that's why I don't need to have anybody else yelling and screaming at them and whatever. So those old movies, they're fun and they're entertaining, but that was a different style than what it is.
Now, can you elaborate on that as far as like, you know, I'm sure you can't give away everything that's in the, you know, in the haunt, but can you elaborate like what someone would be, let's say I was interested right now, I want to put my name on the list to try to get in, and what could I expect from that point on as far as getting in, and elaborate like what someone going through the new experience would expect? Or is it just expect the unexpected?
Well, first off, it's difficult to get through. It's not something that, I mean, it's difficult to get your foot in the door. You have to be screened, go through a process. You have to get reviewed, and you have to have your Facebook account looked at. We have to go through a little, you know, interview process with you and make sure you're not some knucklehead. We, you know, we're trying to keep out the knuckleheads because it's a dangerous hunt. Oh, hold on. There's a phone call coming in. Let me just decline that.
Yeah, no problem.
Sorry about that. The phone rings off the hook now. That's one thing about October. It rings off the hook.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful about who we let in because it is dangerous and you can be hurt. It's not like the other one. The other show with the actors, no one was really going to get hurt. But out here, when it's the one-on-one show, it's much more critical and to make sure we have the right type of contestant. But what we do, if we do a lot of investigation on the person, we find out what they're all about, what makes them tick, because every show is different. So you, when you ask me what kind of things they're going to go through, it's hard to say because we base it upon their fears and their phobias. So every show is going to be unique.
Wow.
And that's what makes it fun for me as well, because I never know what type of show we're going to have to do, what type of event, you know, what type of things they're going to have to be participating in. So it's quite clever, actually.
So how frequently can you do, like if you got to get a contestant and do all this work to put it on, how frequently can you get someone through the or into the hunt?
Yeah, I do one show per week.
Wow. Jeez.
And that's plenty for me because it's a lot of work on my end. And, you know, as you probably know, the cost of admission is a bag of dog food.
Yep.
And so no one's making money on this thing. I may have the scariest, most unique haunt, but I'm the worst businessman in the world. I'm not making a dime on this thing, right? that's kind of the way that works. But it's all good because this is my hobby. I'm not trying to get rich on it. I'm not trying to get famous on it. I do it because it's like putting a big show on. It's just fun to entertain the folks. And it's fun to have folks appreciate what we do. And hopefully, you know, we get the right kind of contestants and go from there.
It's really interesting.
Is there a screening process for health? Because from one video I saw, the old one from 2015, you brought up one person had a heart attack in the old type of show.
Right.
Do you have to check those things out before you let them in?
Absolutely. They have to have a current sports physical, which means I have to know their cardio is good. They have to be able to run, swim, crawl, all that stuff. So they have to have an actual sports physical under their belt. They have to be mentally screened as well. So that way they're mentally prepared. So they're not going to have any triggers. We don't want to have anybody having any issues when they get here. So yes. Yeah, so mental screenings, physical screenings, doctor's notes, you know, you name it. Insurance, you got to have your insurance up to date. You got, in case there is any kind of injuries, you got to have, you know, a variety of things. So yeah, I take it real serious, and that protects me and it protects them as well. Cause you know, once they take that physical, they find out, wow, I didn't realize I had this or I had that. And, you know, maybe we'll let them in and maybe we won't. It depends on what it is and how serious, but yeah. Very serious about that.
Now, what is your background where you are able to kind of, you know, use hypnosis and use everything to make it scary? And also, why do you do this? Like, what is it, just the love of being the best at what you do? Like, what is the reason behind it?
Well, I'm just an entertainer, you know, whether it be a singer or play the guitar, I'm in bands, you know, act, whatever. So I'm just an entertainer.
Right.
And there's no better place than a haunted house to put all those skills together, music and scares and whatever. It's all combined.
Okay.
And if you do it in a different way, like we try to do it, then it can be very, very enlightening for the members going through and very creative on our end. And, you know, we just try to do things differently. So it's all purely about the entertainment. I mean, when people ask me why, it's just because it's fun. It's fun to put on this show. It's like putting a big play on. And that's really, you know, it can't be much deeper than that, really. It's just a lot of fun to see them smile, to see them cry, to see them get into it, to see them have this adventure. And it really is quite the adventure. And have them come out of it all just, you know, with their mind blown and thinking this is the best thing they've ever done in their life. And I know I did my job if that's the case. And that's what I try to do with each and every contestant.
Now, I know you say you don't do this for money and you're putting up 20 grand if you can get through it. And it's kind of a game. So I got to kind of ask, in any way, are you almost rooting for somebody to win one of these times? Or is it just, no, I'm too good at this. I'm glad I'm holding on to my money.
No, I'm glad I'm holding on to the money. I'm glad. And with the newer shows, I've actually taken the 20 grand off the table. At least currently it is. The new show is called Descent. Now, in saying that, if I got somebody who's really gung-ho and wants to go for the desolation tour, should I say, if they want to go for the 10-hour version, then I'll do it. And then I'll say, okay, we'll go ahead and put the 20 grand back up there. But for the normal everyday folk going through, it's I find it's better after doing the money for 3 years, it's better. I get a better quality of contestant if I take the money off the table, because I got too many people that were coming through for the wrong reasons. They were just looking for the money and not for the adventure, not for the experience. And I got some pretty scary people coming through, people that really shouldn't have been trying to partake in such a thing. You know, and so, but again, it's still available, but I'm more selective on who I offer it to. And, you know, because I want, you know, I'm looking for professionals. I'm looking for military people. I'm looking for folks that have good common sense, but you gotta have your head screwed on right in order to come here to begin with. And especially to take the desolation tour, the 10-hour version, you really gotta have your stuff together. I don't want any knuckles.
So I get, that kind of segues into my next question. Like, what is the most, like, what, why are people doing this? Like, we all love to go. Me and Mike went to a haunted house together, very scary, had a good time, laugh. But it was, you know, we weren't trying to, you know, go to these extremes that, you know, your haunt goes through and puts people through. What is the most common thing that you see people, or reason you see people going through this? Is it to get over like a boot camp like experience? Is it to face something that they're afraid of and get over it? Or is it just like the curiosity of it all? Like, what is the main reason you see people doing this for?
Yeah, the kind of folks that we get are just real thrill seekers. Yeah. You know, they're adrenaline junkies, and they're folks that can't get scared any place else. They've done all the bungee jumping. They've gone all the haunted houses. They've done this and done that. They've done the roller coasters and scary movies, and nothing really affects them anymore. And then they hear about us and they think, wow, maybe this will give me that rush I'm looking for. And then with the extra added bonus of, you know, can I win the money or can I actually complete it? That just gives them that thrill as well, saying I'll be the first one. They all want to be the first one,
right?
And they all think that they will be the first one, which is pretty funny, because, you know, I can't tell you how many hundreds and hundreds of times I've heard it saying, I'll be the one, I'm the guy or the gal, I'm the one who can finally get through it. And of course they never do.
What's the shortest time someone's lasted?
I was like, about to ask that. Yeah, like, what was the biggest talker and like was like quit in 10 minutes? My goodness.
Yeah, that happens a lot. The shortest time is when they quit during the contract. A lot of people, I'd say half the people that take the tour quit during the contract. So they never even get through anything because they find out the reality of what they'll be doing. And they're like, I had no idea. Because again, I spell it out for them, you know, no joke. They know exactly what's going to happen. They can't come back and say they didn't know. And when they find out what's really going to take place, they're like, no way, I can't do this. I quit right now. Huh. So if you count those folks, it's 0 seconds, you know. And that's a lot of people like that.
Wow.
And or we get people that just start the first stunt and they back out in 3 seconds. You know, just they just find out that it's real, real quick.
Yeah.
And it does become real very quick. And people have a tendency just to pull the plug and say, that's it, I'm done, I'm over. And it's very, you know, it's interesting on a psychological level. It fascinates me to see how people are going to react and what those magic moments are going to be, because it's always different. And, you know, it's just really interesting on my side of the house to be the guy that gets to watch it and control it and design it, and to see if what I design can actually do what I think it's going to do. And it always does, always.
When you're getting ready to do these like excursions, or maybe right after, and you're dealing with all this psychological abilities and getting in people's head, what do you like during the week? Like, are you able to like just chat around with your family, talk about
your day, I was wondering,
your neighbors, or is it just like, everyone, I need this week, I'll see you next Sunday?
No, I'm just like normal old Russ. You know, I got the 5 dogs that live here, and I live by myself, and live here on the property. And yeah, no, it's all pretty standard now. It doesn't take a whole lot of planning. Yeah. I mean, it takes planning in the sense I have to know what the fears are, but I have admins that do all that. So in this closed group I have, it's called McCamey Manners on Facebook. It's a closed group. It's got like 24,000 members in it. And you have to be selected first off to be in that group to even have a chance of taking the tour. So all my admins do all this homework for me. They do all the investigative work on these guys. They do challenges with them all week long. So all week before their tour, they have to do all these silly nightly challenges live, you know, whether it be eating challenges or facing your fears challenges. You know, if you're afraid of snakes, you got to go to a pet store and wrap a bunch of snakes all around you. You have to, you know, so they'll do all these kind of challenges throughout the week. And then on Saturday, then it's my turn to have some fun with them. And I do have a lot of people helping me out.
It's so interesting. Like, I love the idea of you like petting your dogs and like turning on the football game, and then being like, I gotta run and go scare someone half to death. And
yeah.
I'm just your normal kind of guy. I mean, I'm probably the complete opposite of what people think. Like, you know, I served in the Navy for 23 years. I've never been drunk in my life. I've never taken a drug, never smoked a cigarette, never had a cup of coffee. I don't really cuss. I'm not against any of those things. I'm just saying that's just me. So I'm really straight laced and very conservative. And I'm not like what people think. People think I'm some kind of crazy psychopath. And I'm the most down to earth guy that you'll ever want to meet. And so it's kind of that kind of blows their minds too when they finally meet me.
Yeah. So that also segues. I mean, like, you know, we were even talking setting up this interview, and it doesn't take any more than a Google search to see that, you know, your attraction comes with a lot of controversy and people all over you and sending, you know, mess. What is people's biggest issue with your haunt and your work? Like, what is the biggest thing that you get all the time that you got to kind of defend yourself and stand your ground and explain to people?
They think it's a torture factory. They think that we're just here, you know, 24/7 torturing folks. And it's all just entertainment. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors involved, especially when you use hypnosis. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors involved. And so it's not what people think. And people have to put their logic cap on and realize that if it truly was a torture factory, if I was doing such things, I wouldn't be allowed to do it. I mean, torture is not allowed. You know, I'd be in jail someplace. I've been investigated by everybody you can think of. Every type of law enforcement official has looked into us. Everybody from the FBI on down, trying to shut us down. And there's a reason why we're still open. You know, they try to shut us down, but then when they find out how it really works, they go, "Oh, okay, I kind of get it. It's not really what I thought it was. Okay, that makes sense." But I do a really good job at making people believe what I want them to believe. And so by doing that, and by putting out these scary looking movies and stuff, then, you know, it looks pretty crazy and people get really bent out of shape about it. You know, I get a lot of death threats on a daily basis. You know, it's crazy. Wow. The kind of things I get are insane, but you just kind of let it roll off the shoulders a little bit. But yeah, you know, we're not torturing people. You know, they're here on their own accord. They know exactly, again, what they're getting into. They've read the waiver. They signed off every single part of it. And there actually is a safe word. So it's not like the San Diego days where there was no safe word. Okay. There is a safe yep. word.
Mm. Now, what I did, in the San Diego day, isn't, like, one of your rules, like, no cursing and stuff like that? Like, isn't there a lot of, like, little things to follow as you do this, too?
Absolutely, yeah. If you cuss, you lose $500 for every cuss word.
Oh, I'd be out. I would be out in an hour. I'd be out of money. I'd owe you money.
Like, how strict are you? Like, if I said damn, would that be $500? Or are we talking about, like, the top five?
Yeah, that's $500 right there. and it's more, it's turned into more of a joke.
Right.
So, you know, so now it's just like you wearing the onesie. You got to wear these crazy, creative looking, silly onesies. And I do that because it keeps the body protected, but also looks good on camera. And it's just so ridiculous. So I like the ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the no cussing rule is just ridiculous because everybody wants to cuss when you're getting scared, you know, but if you make a rule about it, you got to follow my rules.
And that's so funny.
It's fun to see people try to restrain themselves. It's quite entertaining. You know, that alone is, you know,
my luck. I'd be the one guy to finally get through it. And then you'd be like, I'd actually owe you money from cursing so much.
Right.
Oh, you made it. You owe me $1,500.
Here's a bill.
In dirty socks and mouth guards. So, you know, we can make it so you can't talk. That's not a problem.
Well, let me ask you. We're coming towards the end here, and I've really enjoyed talking to you, Russ. I find you really interesting, and I love knowing the kind of – behind the scenes stuff that we don't see, and we get to hear the logic behind a lot of this besides the sensationalism. Do you ever go like you have your attraction that has, you know, this lore about it and people wandering from all over the world? Do you ever go to like someone else's haunted house or haunt or whatever you want to call it and kind of like be like, you know, like it, like, are you looking at it like, come on, guy, like this isn't even close? Or can you appreciate like other haunted attractions and other people's work?
Yeah, that's funny you asked that, because in fact, during October, I don't have any shows in October, so I can go specifically out and visit all these other haunted houses. And so I travel as much as I can in that's October, smart. And I've already gone to five of them already. And they'll be, you know, I go to a couple each week. And to answer your question, yeah, I appreciate the effort and the time that people put into all kinds of haunts, whether it be a home haunt. In fact, home haunts are my favorite because there's such passion behind it. People are really, you know, they're not doing it for the money. They're doing it because they just love haunting. So I love home haunts. I love the big boys, the professional stuff. I get a big kick out of going to haunted houses, and I'm a great guest too. I get all scared and stuff. You know,
Well, I was going to say, do you still get scared or do you see everything?
Yeah, sure. Cause I get into it, you know, it's more fun if you're into it, you know? So I'm not looking at like, oh, that's ridiculous. That's silly. Oh, I don't like how that looks. You know, I go there to get transformed to another place for that time I'm there. And that makes it more fun for me. So you bet.
It's awesome.
Out of curiosity, let's just say you had a long lost twin brother and he's like, I do everything like you. If he said, would you know how he would be able to design a challenge for yourself?
Yeah. I don't like critters. I don't like spiders, snakes, and bugs. I use them. I use them in my show, right?
Yeah.
But I have to face those fears every week when I use a show, when I have a show that has critters involved. I'm not a fan of creepy crawlies at all. Mm. And I'm also kind of claustrophobic as well, too. So there's a lot of claustrophobia involved. So a lot of the stuff that I don't like, you're going to find here at the tour.
It's interesting.
That's where you start, right? Because you think, well, I can't be the only one that doesn't like spiders and snakes and small spaces. There must be other people like that as well. And sure enough, you know, of course, that's the way it always is.
I'm thinking me and Mike went to a haunted house about two or three years ago. The one part that freaked me out, they put you in these little coffins and you had to kind of go and they separate us. And then my wife quit because they told her they were going to put bugs on her. So you're 100% right. those are timeless fears and whatnot.
Absolutely.
Russ, I want to thank you so much for the time. I found it really interesting. I'd love to get you on again sometime. If people want to check out like the manor or get information, or maybe someone hearing this is intrigued on trying to be the next contestant, where is the best place for them to go?
A couple things. Go to the website, go to McCaneyManor.com and fill out the contact page. And then I will then email them more information from there. Or they can go straight to the Facebook group, that special closed group. Again, it's the one with 24,000 members. Anything else, they're fake groups. There's only one real McCaney Manor, and that's the one with the 24,000 members. And you need to answer all the questions to get into it. If you get selected in there, then you can talk to one of the admins. The admins can get you screened to become a guest, a contestant. And then there's one YouTube page. There's only one proper YouTube page, and that's called McCaney Manor Presents. Everything else are hack channels, stolen stuff. You know, there's a lot of crazy out there. But those three sites are the real McCoy stuff.
That's awesome. Real quick, Russ, if me and Mike were to go into McCaney Manor, how long would we last if you've screened us for the last 30 minutes? Would we make it past the waiver part?
I don't think so.
He's honest.
Yeah.
He's honest.
No, I'm thinking in my head, I ain't making it past.
I'd probably get disqualified. Could I be like, can I pet your dogs? And you're like, no. I'm like, well, I'm out.
Russ, thank you so much for your time, man. And stay safe out there and keep doing what you're doing.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, Berlo. What amount of money would it take you to try to do Russ's thing? Like, I liked, like, we've talked about this before, but I like the haunted houses that we did. We did the one, we did two together. We did the one that was, yep, the one Bane where we got separated, which I thought was really cool, but the separation part kind of ruined the group experience of it. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of like, you go there with a group of people, you kind of want to like be together and laugh and get scared together, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I understand what they were doing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because a lot of people go as a group and just kind of, you know, somebody's always like in the middle or something. It's like, all right, people in the front and the back are going to get it. So I understand their thought process, but I will agree.
It was scary.
I mean, I forget if it was Izzy or Alex, but one of them, we were waiting like an extra, like, it was probably Izzy.
It was Izzy,
we waited,
yep,
like an extra like 30, 40 minutes for her, where it's like, what the?
Yeah, because Alex quit when they told her they were going to put bugs on her. And she was like, nope, see ya. I'm out.
I still maintain they probably weren't going to do.
No, it was probably like plastic bugs or they were going to pretend they're eating them or something like that.
I believe I asked her, I'm like, so when they rent the building, you think they sit back and say it's cool when they give it back? There's like thousands of cockroaches running around this rented building.
Right. But when you're in like a heightened sense like that, like you're instantly like, nope, you know, like you're not going to change their mind. Yeah. I remember the coffin part being a little freaky. Wasn't big on that, being locked into that thing, even for, what was it, like maybe 30, 40 seconds, a minute max. I don't know. It was still a little weird.
Somewhere in there.
I don't like the control of someone else having me in something. Like, I don't like that part.
I went through that. I think I was pretty calm with that. And I think the reason was I was sitting back waiting for, all right, they're going to scare the crap out of me, like ripping the top off and like screaming or something like that. So I was awaiting that. So when it just kind of opened. I'm like, all right.
Yeah. I mean, it was a hell of a haunted house. It was pretty scary.
Oh, very nice.
And it was designed really well. And but then we went to the one in Sleepy Hollow, which was more like, it was like a fun experience. Like, yeah, I got a little scared, but it was fun to see like the effort in the into the haunt or the haunted house. So that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And then I had went to one that I thought was really cool. I forget what town. It's somewhere near East Rutherford in New Jersey. And that was really, that was like probably the, it was like a combination of those two. Like you stayed together, but the production was ridiculous. It was really
was
cool.
Was that the one where you guys got guns and shot zombies?
Yep. You started off shooting zombies and then you get into the haunted house. And then my comic friend Joe Fernandez was literally scared of like everything. And that was the most entertaining. Like when you go by yourself, you lose that like, ha ha, Mike got scared. Aha, Scott got scared. Like, it's funny to watch your friends get scared of something or who's going to get it next, you know? So I liked that part of the haunted house experience. Hey, could you see yourself doing Russ's thing for like an amount of money or for even out of curiosity?
Like, am I getting it regardless of the results or I got to win this thing too?
No, like just to go try it.
Just to go try it, probably like the 20K would be, I mean, if you literally say, as long as you say, like, I'll even say you got to stay here for at least an hour.
Right.
You know, like actually feel some of this stuff. And in the end, I get 20K, it'd be something like, all right, that pays off the house for the year. That's good.
Yeah, it would need to be like, because I'm not into like the torture thing or people really touching me. Like, I don't mind you touch me like you know, you jump scare me and poke me in the back or something like that. But I don't want people touching my face and putting their fingers in my mouth. And that's going to cost you. Like, that's going to cost something.
That's a bold statement, Scott, saying you don't like when strangers touch you in the face. I mean, this political age, I can't believe you came out with that.
I don't like people touching my face in general. I never liked it. I remember one time my dad, we used to wrestle around and stuff like that. And it was Easter and he squeezed my nose so hard that I got these black and blues like on my nose. And I remember spending the entire Easter with my sweater over my nose like this and just being like miserable in a chair, like trying not to look at anybody from my family.
Scott, you want some ham? No.
It's exactly what it was like.
I just want to sit here.
Yeah, I just want Easter to be over and that's stupid, you know?
Scott was 31 at that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was last year, guys. My nose has healed. My nose has healed. But yeah, Russ McKamey, he's got a very interesting thing, man. I would love to. I want to see the YouTube videos of people going through it. I don't need to do it myself. Fascinating guest, but I don't need to do it myself. Perla, what do you got? Mm. It's Halloween.
Well, yeah, I got a little Halloween thing here for Scott. So, me being a horror fan, I know about the different studios and all. So, Blumhouse Productions, I'm not sure if you've been keeping up with them. They've been having a trend where they're creating horror movies out of properties that weren't horror movies. So, for example, the movie Happy Death Day is a play on Groundhog Day, where the girl keeps on reliving the same day and the killer murders her at the end of the day.
Right.
They remade Fantasy Island where they reimaged it with your deepest fantasies come true, but deadly consequences. And even later this year, their movie Freaky is coming out, which is basically Freaky Friday, where there's a body swap. And one of them is a gruesome killer and the other one's a teenage girl. So the gruesome killer is killing people as a teenage girl.
Now, do they use like the same character names and stuff like that? Or they kind of just like use the film as like a backbone kind of?
I'd say like a backbone, like at the end of Happy Death Day, the joke was the boyfriend character talks to the girl. He's like, that's exactly like Groundhog Day. And she's like, 22 or whatever. She's like, I never heard of the movie. And the joke is him. No, this is exactly like Groundhog Day. I do know, I didn't see the Fantasy Island movie, but I believe in the end, like one of the characters had to stay on the island, like something where it's like, it was a deal made to let somebody go. And he's like, well, you'll be my partner. And he's like, all right, I don't want anybody to know my name, so I'll go by my nickname, Tattoo. stuff like that.
Right.
And Freaky is coming out later this year, so time will tell. So I figured let's try to come up with some ideas on properties that are not horror and make them into a horror movie.
All right. I think I got
three. So I came up with... I got three here, some pretty flushed out stuff here. So would you like to...
No, I would like you to go first.
Kick or receive.
I'm kicking.
Oh. Okay. Here we go. An eccentric couple hosts a mystery adventure show. They're millionaires and the face of their energy drink brand that got passed down to them. They have elaborate shows on the internet going to the most haunted locations in the world. This year, they have a contest to see who joins them on their excursion to sail into the Bermuda Triangle. As an added bonus, Asian horror actress Jane Jin Wire will join the group that includes a scientist who studies weather patterns and the crew skipper. The winner is a Kansas student named Anne Marie. They set off on their journey when they get engulfed with fog and begin experiencing choppy waters. The conditions are so dangerous, the ship was nearly sunk. In all the chaos, the skipper was shocked to see a tiny island where they could head towards. Unfortunately, the ship sustained damage as they got to the island. With the people on the boat exploring, they noticed hundreds of ships along the shore. The oldest being the ship of one Samuel Thomas Gill, who was thought to be one of the earliest pirates of the sea who lived on the native island, learned voodoo to torture and capture souls. As the scientist tries to build a communication to get off the island using his knowledge he obtained studying to be a professor, he sends off the survivors to explore the island to try to find parts to help boost the signal. As they explore the island, each cast member having a hallucination vision of people in their past with sometimes gory results. It looks like as though Captain Gill again is killing.
Wow.
And the twist at the end? The professor was the one all along who was the ancient captain. He would assist in different ways to get people to the island, pretend he did not understand what was going on, right, and conveniently unable to create a device able to get the to save the group. Samuel Gill would appear on the island to warn new people entering the island of their doom. The name is Gill again.
And then at the end, it could be Killigan's Island.
I would have thought about that. It was a coin flip. I went with Gill again, just so like people would. But either or, it's good.
I got it. Wow. See, I missed the memo on this. I didn't know we were writing big treatments of these movies. I just thought of three ideas of movies that could work. So mine are not going to be anywhere near as involved as yours. But
okay.
All right. Gilligan. Island.
What were your thoughts on it? Would you go see that movie?
I would certainly see it, especially if it was straight to TV. I think it
dollar DVD bin kind of deals.
Yeah. I think it could easily work. We're in an age where Sharknado and Sharknado 9 are still hits and get plenty of attention. So Killigan's Island could easily be on like that kind of maybe in that kind of ballpark where fans know it's quirky and campy, but can really enjoy it. I'm even doubling down. I'll watch it even more if the Harlem Globetrotters make an appearance somehow in there.
That'll be like the mid-credits scene where like for no reason and they're just like, why are we playing the Washington Generals out here?
Exactly. And then they just all get murdered or something like that. Like, I'm all in. My watch score is, I give it like a 4 out of 5. I would watch that. Give it a shot. I thought a good concept for a movie. This movie saddened me to death when I was a kid. I couldn't watch it after like the first time because it involved the death of a dog. I think it was from like 1957. And that was the movie Old Yeller. Okay. Now, poor little, I believe his name was Travis, the story of Old Yeller, you know, he becomes the family dog, you know, he becomes kind of the older son's dog, their buddies, their pals, you know, and Old Yeller gets sick. I believe Yeller bites, he bites somebody, I believe. And then he shuts the door, he tries to attack the sister, I think it was.
I believe so.
And he's upset, and Travis, he refuses to get a new dog. Okay, he doesn't want a new dog. He wants Old Yeller. Okay, and then his big stupid dad comes home, and he tells him, and Jim, he basically makes the kid shoot his own dog. It's like, it's one of the saddest movies you've ever seen. It's like any dog movie that you know the dog's going to die. This one's even worse because the kid has to kill his own dog. It's like, it's such a 1950s, like out in the West kind of vibe. Put your own animal down, boy. You know, that kind of thing, you know?
I gave you a chore, son. I expect you to finish it.
Exactly. That kind of like tough leatherneck kind of vibe. Like, but you know, if you're a dog lover or an animal lover, it just like rips your heart. So now I'm thinking, what if they redo it? Okay. What if they redo it?
All right.
You know, Travis reluctantly shoots the dog. But what he didn't tell his dad is that he's been, you know, he's out. Like, dad's always working. He's been out. He's been doing a little bit of research on the old religion.
Oh.
But the forbidden religions, you know, fine. Right. So he meets another character, which we never saw, but she's kind of a witchcrafty type woman, you know, out in the wild there, out in Kansas or wherever the hell they were. And she's kind of been a recluse for a long time, and he kind of stumbles upon her. He's all depressed, you know, after he had to kill his own dog, and he's kind of looking for a mother figure, a friend, something to kind of help him out. Gets lured in, and she kind of starts to talk to him. You never hear of Sensimilia? You ever hear of like some voodoo? You know, they say a prayer, they do a bunch of things, and they're like, he goes into a trance. He tries some weird tea, something like that, right? And he goes into this voodoo thing. She's like, what's one thing you would like, Travis, more than? And she's like, I want Yeller back. And she's like, well, what if I told you I could get Yeller back? And he's like, I'll do anything. Says the says these prayers with the woman. Yeller comes back, only Yeller's no longer Yeller. Yeller's seen the dark side. Yeller's now a Cujo-like spirit animal that is just going through the town of Kansas or whatever. I don't remember what state it took place. It would be kind of weird if I did know exactly. Texas. Post-Civil War Texas. Yeah. So you get the Civil War thing. Yeller's ripping through. You know, Ghost Yeller is ripping through the different armies and these old, you know, old Confederate soldiers. He's tearing apart that. He's hunting the dad down. And the big twist is Travis, I believe his name was, or whatever the son's name was, he has to make a decision again. He knows he's the only one who could put this ghost dog down.
Ooh, I kind of like that. I kind of like the kind of seeing the ending where... Like, is he going to put him down? Is Yeller going to get him?
Right.
Kind of like life decision making.
Because Yeller, Yeller has been kind of twisted by the dark side and the voodoo. So he's able to play on, you know, we'll call him Travis, his, you know, play with his heart and tell him, you know, show him he's okay. But really, he's been ripping apart the town and killing people. And he's really got to try to decide whether he wants to save Yeller. For, you know, this is only wish, or put him down one more time. Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh, I dig that. I really do. And I think you can even add a little side thing where it's like maybe the dog comes back and he doesn't tell the parents initially.
Ooh.
And like some of this stuff happens where they start wondering and all, is the kid acting out since Yeller went away? You know what I mean? Kind of even make it like
so
psychological.
Right. So Yeller kind of comes back normal and all these things start to unfold a little bit. He's getting weirder and weirder, bringing back crazy dead animals and things like that. Hmm? Oh, I lost you. Oh, there you are. So,
I think, just like you can even make it psychological, the movie, in the sense that you question, did Yeller come back or has it been the kid all along?
Oh, I like that twist. All right. Yeah. So maybe it's all in his head the whole time. A little Sixth Sense M. Night Shyamalama ding dong twist right there. All right.
He got some of the meth from that girl, and instead of ripping his eyeballs out, he thinks it's his dog, and he just starts eating people.
Old Yeller 2. Here, boy.
I like you.
All right.
Story number 2 from me. A band is traveling across country for a music competition in the Southern Mountains. The band is constantly practicing as they are being pushed by their manager, who is this ruthless father figure who demands perfection, like Joe Jackson. The entire group... The entire group is poor and need this contest to get out of debt. While driving through the ridge, their bus breaks down in the middle of the night. As the driver attempts to fix the old 1960s bus, a group of mutant family members attack the band with different sharp instruments. Pan out to the screams and struggles on the broken down bus. We then focus on a group of young adults in a party limo getting lifted into the city. The limo suddenly loses control and crashes, stranding the group in the middle of nowhere. As the group begins walking to get help, we see visions of the mutants stalking their prey. The party band group also notice they hear faint sounds of 60s music in the middle of no man's land. People are getting sliced and diced left and right, and the group looks to find civilization. As they come across the band's bus from earlier, they notice the bus is covered in clothing from possible past victims, multiple colors and checkered patterns spread all over the rusting bus. The twist? The mutants attacking the party limo is the original family. The visions will make it appear the first attack was many years ago before the party van. But turns out it was only about a year apart. They were about to fight. They were able to fight off the mutants to live. The deranged father figure looked at the family missing body parts and destroyed instruments, became enraged over the fact that they would not be able to win the contest looking like this. For months, he's instructed the family to trap people driving through the ridge at night, decapitate body parts and have them sew them onto their bodies, use hair to restring guitars, and graft skin on a tambourine. The plan was to live off the supplies and eat the victims to win the following year's contest. And the name of this story? A Part Ridge, A Family Story.
Wow. See, I could see this one breaking down more into a either miniseries or a show, like where the family is constantly under the attack of the old partridges and whatnot. Like, it seems like there could be a lot of character development there, too, because there's so many members of both families and whatnot. You could really... You can go Walking Dead style. You could do solo episodes of people, but I think there's something there. There's a period piece. You can kind of really bring back that 70s vibe with the clothing of the you call them, ghosts, zombies, I guess.
Mutant family. You know, the point is more
mutant.
The mutant family attacks them. They defeat that mutant family, and in essence, they become the next mutant family.
Wow. That's deep. It's deep. I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. I think it's I would watch it. Again, you throw it on one of those networks like that has no other good programming, I'm watching it. I'm on, you know, you throw Gilligan's Island with a Partridge Family like marathon, and I'm like, I got popcorn and I got beers. I'm watching.
All right. Got my writing chops here.
I didn't really write a whole treatment here. My next one takes place in Scotland. The oppressed Scotland in, I believe, the 1300s, if not earlier than that. So we all know the story. William Wallace, sentenced to death for fighting for his freedom. However, William never got his freedom. Everyone else benefited off of William being put to death by the English, right? But poor old William, sacrificed, castrated, and killed in front of everyone. So many people harming him. So many people trading on him during the story. He's got a lot to settle, okay? So William Wallace, you know, there's a lot of old Celtic prayer and kind of... I almost want to say voodoo again, but there's a lot of ancient prayer going on, a lot of ancient belief. Unfortunately, on Halloween, they're able to summon William Wallace, who's searching for his freedom. Not only going through England, but also going through his old Scottish counterparts that traded on him. And you can hear him calling in the night, "Freedom!" And that's how you know he's coming. He comes with a horse and a claymore. He's kind of like zombie version of William Wallace. He's just like half blue skull with like the sword and his horse's bones, and he comes around hunting. And the name of the movie, Braveheart.
I demand there be a scene at some point where he's chasing somebody and he does the whole show his ass to his opponent kind
of deal. Yes. That could definitely be part of it. His ass could be all bones, though, like, because he's kind of like this worn down, you know, gross version of William Wallace. But, you know, he never, you know, William never really benefited from all his fight, you know. And he had a lot of people who turned on him, and eventually that's what led to William Wallace's death, according to Braveheart. So, you know, hell, we can get Mel Gibson to play it again because he's aged like, you know, 30 years or whatever it's been since that movie. He could pick it back up.
Oh, I'd definitely be down for this. And all, it's kind of, it's in the same like things as like those movies, Vampires versus Abraham Lincoln and stuff like that, where you just take a period piece and bring it over and all. I would definitely dig that.
All right. So you're in for Braveheart.
Absolutely. All right, my final story. Andrew has been a loner all his life. His mother has brought kids over to the house all his life, but Andrew has severe social anxiety. So every child shows up once, and he never sees them again. Andrew only had his imaginary friends, his group of toys that he played with alone in his room. Andrew is now in his late 40s. Coping with life. The people at the office he works with looks at him as something creepy. Andrew is mocked a lot and has pranks pulled on him. Even people who try to be on his side, like the nice HR lady, are shunned due to his inability to connect with people. Though Andrew has been found to have a crush with one lady at work named Bo. He talks about her to his friends, the toys, and even makes a doll of her that he names Bo Peep. He shows Bo Peep to Bo. Bo is trying as best to be kind to Andrew, but is being mocked as he found his co-workers laughing at what transpired. Andrew even lost his job when HR feels his display makes the work environment uncomfortable. Shortly after, bodies begin piling up as people are taken out in different ways, such as a slinky doll made up of a razor wire strangling one victim, the HR lady choking to death from army men shoved down her throat, a person missing parts of their body replaced with plastic eyes, ears, and sharp-edged hat embedded in their skull. I call this story Toy Gory. The twist, in a reverse psycho, the mother was the one killing everyone, impersonating Andrew and hurting her son. Oh. But, Scott, this is a double twist.
Oh, baby, double twist.
Because we find out Andrew's imaginary friends contain the souls of the kids he never saw again. They are actually alive and cursed to attack those who hurt Andrew, which eventually shows Andrew was just as evil as his mom all along.
Oh, snap. Toy Gory. I'm in. You got creepy. You got a million ways you could do creepy scenes there. You also got a million toys you could bring in. There's another one. Why stop at one? You could bring in 8,000 new toys and new souls and new, you know, you could make four of them. Toy Gory 4.
Easily. I mean, I'm looking for the money. So Blue Mouse, if you're listening to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, we're ready to make a deal unless you take these ideas and steal them from us.
All right. I'm in. I like that one a lot too. I'm gonna go 4.5 on the watch value.
There. Wow.
Because it could be, what's nice about it too, is it could be animated. It could be, you know, it could be both ways. It could be real actors, it could be animated, it could be unlimited.
Mm.
Right? Where Sky's Braveheart, limit, baby. Braveheart, I mean Graveheart, you gotta have real actors. It's gotta be, you know, there's gotta be a lot of gore. Yeah. You gotta have the same gore level, if not more, than Braveheart. You know, the production value has got to be really high. You got a lot of, you know, that's going to be expensive production. That's the problem here. And then Old Yeller, maybe I phased myself out. Maybe it's been too much time since people cared about poor Yeller, you know? Might be dipping too far.
But I think that's got a name that do it. I mean, even like recently they did the Banana Splits movie. I mean, that's a movie from our TV show from the 60s, and they turned them into robotic killers.
So. All right. My last one, it's a campy kind of movie. There's some laughs. It's more of those kind of funny horror movies where there's going to be some laughs in there.
Ooh, okay.
where we don't, you know, it's not pure horror, but we'll get plenty of gore. That's kind of like one of those movies. This comes from a poor guy who's been picked on his whole life. You know, in the office, he was kind of just moved around. He never was involved in the parties, was passed over for any promotions, got the worst offices, you know. Meanwhile, the company's going through all sorts of changes. It's being, it's being stuck dry by three guys and their little scam. The bosses stink. But poor old Milton here, poor Milton, always got passed over by everything. And you know what? He is just constantly being abused. And eventually, everyone who's been abused, remember, snaps at some point, like a twig, you know? After a while, you know, he wasn't the healthiest man. He's constantly looking for his stapler. Constantly looking for a stapler. So, Milton, years after, I forget the name of the place in Office Space, years after gets a new job where he finds he's being treated like this again, and he's finally had enough. It's like Globotech or something like that.
I'll look it up. Keep going.
His goal is to lure people into his office, which is generally, of course, in the darkest, dingiest corner in the basement where he kills people. With his stapler. And you can still hear him in the hallways. Have you seen my stapler? Have you seen my stapler? As it gets louder and louder until he eventually kills you and staples your faces onto his wall. Name of the movie? Off with Face.
First off, In Attack.
In Attack. There it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is bringing Milton into the spotlight now, and he becomes this psychopathic,
genre. I dig
dark
it.
Killer.
Yeah, I get your vibes with it because I can still see the comedy because people love that character. I mean,
love that movie.
Classic. I can totally see Steven Root coming back to do this movie.
100%.
And I can totally see the kind of turn and on, like them still having like their regular office conversations, like at the water cooler. Like, can you believe people are dying here and stuff like that? And and then like Boss is still coming up about the TTS reports and stuff like that while murders are occurring throughout.
Exactly. And him being in the basement and everything, that really adds to his creepy vibe. That's where everything goes down. Guys go down to see Milton, they never come back.
I dig all three that you did, Scott. I think we did a great job.
Thank you, pal.
If we knew people, we could probably make money off of this.
Well, maybe we should email these guys, the people who make those films. But all right. Another fun Halloween episode in the books for Verbal Shenanigans. We always try to make these somewhat interesting, somewhat special. We also try to do a Christmas episode. We've done a President's Day episode before. Maybe we don't want to do those anymore because God knows what's coming up the pipeline. But hope you guys have a happy Halloween. I want to thank Russ McCamey. Go check out McCamey Manor if you think you've got the stuff to try to... to accomplish that, because I certainly don't. Berlew, anything to promote before we get on out of here for another year?
Well, since we're ending October, I would say keep up with Pumpkin Spice Whatever. We'll be on our final weeks when this episode comes out. I got some special things coming up on the 30th and Halloween. Tune in for that. But every night, me and the wife do pumpkin spice food reviews and have a little chit-chat comedy with it. Got some good feedback. One company is putting up one of my pictures on their Instagram posts, so that's kind of cool. And I'm getting a case of free French pudding. So how many people can say that when they do their little side projects? But it's on Facebook.com. The site is Michael Berlew Random Stuff to watch it live, or you can just see as I share it out. But the show is called Pumpkin Spice Whatever.
All right. Yeah. So go check that out. And guys, I'm just going to promote us. So we are constantly looking for new guests, constantly looking for, hold on, I lost Mike there. Constantly looking for new people to join the show. And, you know, that's how it goes. But we need subscribers. We need listeners. We need people to basically help us out. So please follow us and listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, every other podcast platform. Guys, I hope you have a happy Halloween. Please listen, subscribe, and share. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye. And shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul and seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder in surprise when you hear these zombies shriek. We're so sorry, skeletons, you're so misunderstood. You only want to socialize, but I don't think we should. A spooky, scary skeleton shouts startling, shrilly screams. They'll sneak under sarcophagus and just won't leave you be. We'll be right back.